Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. This Sunday, the 82nd Annual Academy Awards will be broadcast. And this time around, the Academy is trying something new. There are a whopping 10 nominees for Best Picture. And today, our panel will weigh in on what's going to win and which films are this year's long shots. And we'll make some picks for the Best Actor and Best Actress, and we want to hear what you think of this year's Oscar nominees. With me in the studio is Columbus Dispatch film critic Nick Chortis. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And also in the studio, the other paper film critic, Hope Madden. Thanks for being here, Hope.
Thanks for having me.
And then on the phone from Cincinnati is Steve Ramos. He is the movie critic for Box Office Magazine and BoxOffice.com. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning, Amy. I'm happy to be talking with you.
And let's get started with the big category, Best Picture. One of the nominees that's been getting a lot of buzz, of course, is James Cameron's blockbuster Avatar. Now, before we talk about Avatar, let's hear a little from the movie. In this scene, Jake, played by Sam Worthington, is learning the ways of the Na'vi. They're the people who live on Pandora. And he talks about his experiences in a video log that he keeps for the scientists.
Okay, location, shack. And the days are starting to blur together. The language is a pain, but, you know, I figure it's like field stripping a weapon. Just repetition, repetition.
Na'vi.
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 Leteri calls me scoundrel. It means moron.
This is a very important part of it.
Norm's attitude has improved lately.
I see you, but it's not just I'm seeing you in front of me. It's I see into you. I see.
Scooty's back on board, but he thinks I'm a scoundrel too.
I understand you.
All right, that was a scene from Avatar, one of the 10 Best Picture nominees. Hope, do you think Avatar will win Best Picture?
Actually, I don't.
Okay.
I think that because of the way the Academy is voting this year, they're ranking all 10, whereas in previous years you just choose the one you like the best. And I think because of that, polarizing films have less of a chance. I think films that are going to be on everybody's top 1, 2, and 3 are more likely to pull ahead than somebody that would be on a lot of number ones and also a lot of maybe 8, 9, and 10. So,
what does ranking mean? What does that mean? That the Academy doesn't normally do that?
No, normally there are 5 candidates, and you just pick the one that you think is the best. And that's and then, you know, whichever movie gets the most votes wins, whereas this year you rank them from 1 to 10. And so whoever has the highest tally wins. So that, I think, gives good films that are going to be in everybody's top 3 an edge over films that might get a lot of number ones, but also might, you know, come into the bottom of some people's list as well.
Okay. And Nick, what do you think?
Yeah,
it's
possible that a film that isn't it possible that a film that doesn't get any number one votes could possibly win?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Best Picture. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So Hope makes a good point. If I had money on this, which I don't, I would I would probably put it on Avatar, though. I think that's the front runner as far as I'm concerned. I don't think that it should win, but if I was picking in a prediction pool,
and
I would put it in there. Hope makes a good point, but I still think it's just probably, you know, far too overwhelmingly popular for not to win.
Right, right. And Steve, do you think that the big budget and the fact that it won the Golden Globe, does that give it an edge?
I don't think it's really about it winning the Golden Globe, which probably is a better fit, you know, it did not surprise anyone. But, you know, the Oscars is an election. And like all great elections, there's so much drama. There are so many human factors to it. And, you know, so you look at those elements. For example, you know, we know, you know, the LA Times reported the other day that 600 of those Oscar ballots were delivered 5 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, the very last possible minute that the voters could turn in their ballots, which meant that all the controversy of this past week over what we think is maybe the number two film, the Iraq war drama, The Hurt Locker, and all the controversy with the producer being banned over a negative email campaign against Avatar, the negative controversy over the Iraq soldier who's bringing a lawsuit for plagiarism, you know, against them, probably made an impact. And I think for those human reasons, the election is going to go to Avatar, and it will win Best Picture, Oscar. I think if Hurt Locker had a chance, unfortunately, the human factor, a producer acting out of line, a lawsuit, is probably going to cost it its chance, the Best Picture, this Sunday.
Now, I thought that the lawsuit that was filed was not filed until after all the ballots had to be turned in. The lawsuit that Steve is talking about is that someone says that the Hurt Locker basically stole his story, that he is actually the main character in the Hurt Locker, and he didn't get any credit for it. Do you know if that – I thought that they filed the lawsuit kind of after the ballots were already due.
No, you're referring to Sergeant Jeffrey Sarver out of Michigan. And, you know, and not only was the lawsuit filed, but I would even say, you know, and the producer we're talking about is, you know, Nicholas Chartier, you know, one of the producers of the Hurt Locker. And I think what's also very interesting to note, since we're talking Hurt Locker, Avatar, and that is kind of the two communities of Hollywood facing against each other for the Best Picture Award this Sunday, which clearly would mean a lot more for Hurt Locker in terms of DVD sales and attention. And the Hurt Locker is a phenomenal film. You know, Avatar is phenomenal in many ways, too. They just represent two polar opposite communities of movie making. But Nicholas Chartier, you know, no one is speaking badly of Mr. Chartier because of his email campaign telling people, you know, don't vote for the $500 million sci-fi blockbuster. Vote for our small-budgeted Iraq war drama. I mean, people do that all the time. It wasn't even a nasty email. You know, he just happened to get caught. I will say this, though. People have reported on the emails that he shared with the attorney for Sergeant Jeffrey Sarver. And I have to admit, when I read those emails, I had less respect for Mr. Chartier, because his emails toward this Iraq War soldier who's saying, hey, I think you kind of took my life story and made it into a movie without credit, I found that email kind of just amateurish and kind of nasty in spirit. I read that email, and I can tell you that Oscar voters read those emails, and I think it's going to make an impact on Sunday, sadly to say. And it's going to cost them an award.
Nick or Hope,
so Steve, what you're saying is that an Oscars, that not always the best movie gets to win. Is that right?
Can that be true?
I think the history of the Oscars are not about – of course it's not about the best movies getting
right.
awards. But you know what's really interesting, too?
This year it's not even about them getting nominated.
Well, no, of course not. But you know what's also interesting, and you know – and I think
– sound like a bunch of crabby critics.
This is interesting, is that even the big money makers, you know, the history – you know, people we think because Avatar will likely get the award on Sunday – We think that the big money makers always get the awards, but actually it's the opposite. The big money makers seldom get the awards. It's just that Mr. Cameron's big money maker got the award, you know, in recent history, and lightning will probably strike twice for him as well on Sunday. So, you know, I think what fascinates me, and I think what fascinates everyone, and why the Oscars is the greatest production Hollywood has ever made, is it just reaches to every community. I mean, just even think about this week. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen is banned, you know, is kicked off the telecast because they decided his comic skit that was poking fun at Avatar maybe would offend Mr. Cameron. So they kick him off the telecast. That makes news. Sarah Palin goes to the gifting suites and takes some gifts. And that makes political news. Barbara Streisand is going to give the directing award. I mean, everything makes news, because there's something for everybody. You know, it's the best production Hollywood has ever made, and that's why it's still strong after 82 years.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Hurt Locker. We have been mentioning it, and we do have a scene just to let people hear a little bit of the Hurt Locker. In this scene, Colonel Reed, who is played by David Morse, is praising Sergeant James, who is Jeremy Renner, and about his ability to disarm bombs.
You're the guy in the flaming car, Sergeant James?
Afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. You're a wild man, you know that?
Huh? Yes, sir.
He's a wild man, you know that? Huh? Why don't you shake your hand?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How many bombs have you disarmed?
I'm not quite sure, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes.
I asked you a question.
873,
sir. 873. 873.
They're counting today, sir, yes.
That's got to be a record. What's the best way to go about disarming one of these things?
The way you don't die, sir.
That's a good one. That's spoken like a wild man.
And that's a scene from The Hurt Locker, which is, I believe, tied with Avatar for the most nominations this year. Hope, how do you think The Hurt Locker will do overall?
Oh, I think it'll do pretty well. If it doesn't take Best Picture, it's likely to take Best Screenplay. I think it's the most likely to take Best Director. It won't get the acting award, but For a film that really, you know, its box office was pretty low, as were almost every Iraq War film, you know, to come out really ever. I think that it's going to, you know, it's going to make a pretty big impression at the Oscars.
And let's talk about Best Director for a minute, because you mentioned that. And obviously for directing, there are five nominees the normal way. So James Cameron is nominated for Avatar, and then the director for The Hurt Locker is nominated. And Hope, I think that you wanted to talk about having this female director being nominated.
Yeah, I you know, it's exciting, the possibility that after 82 years we'll finally have a woman win Best Director, which seems it seems likely. I mean, she's certainly not a lock, but it seems likely that she would win. But it's just funny to me that it's going to be Kathryn Bigelow, of all people. She directed Point Break, for God's sake. I mean, this is, you know, she's really I mean, she stuck it out. She's been working for a long, long time. But her films to date, for the most part, are just awful. Unwatchable, most of them. Blue Steel, anyone? It's flabbergasting to me. I'm excited for her. I'm excited for everybody that she's likely going to win, but I'm just slain that it's going to be her.
Nick?
I don't think that's true. There's Near Dark.
I did like Near Dark.
There's
it's
Near
true.
Dark. There's Strange Days.
No.
K-19,
really?
The Widowmaker.
No, come on.
I didn't mind Strange Days.
I don't think I'm up to par on my Kathryn Bigelow directing.
I mean, yeah, I think Bigelow's, as far as if there's a lock, I think she'll get the best director.
So award. She'll beat her ex-husband.
She'll beat her ex-husband, James Cameron. That's right. I mean, it just seems to me that they'll give the best picture to Avatar, and they'll give best director to Bigelow to honor the Hurt Locker, and that's the way they'll split it up. And but yeah, I think she has a real great shot especially after winning the Directors Guild Award.
Mm-hmm. Steve, do you agree with that assessment, director versus big picture, to give them each an award?
No, I think we're not all, you know, logging into easyodds.com and placing our Las Vegas bets.
Right.
But unfortunately, I do think, because of some of the political happenings of this past week or so, and the fact that the voters did vote so late, that I think sadly it's going to be a bit of a wash for Hurt Locker on Sunday, which is too bad because, you know, the film did not perform well at the box office last year. Although, you know what? What Kathryn Bigelow and her screenwriter, Mark Bull, really set out to do, and they were very public about it, was to make an action movie. They didn't want to make a movie that was, say, as political as In the Valley of Allah, Rendition, and some of the other Iraq war dramas that were very political and socio-political themes and failed with audiences. They wanted to make an action movie that would appeal to fanboys and also mature audiences alike, and it didn't work. I mean, it approximately $10 million in box office, approximately. And so here's a film that, if it would win the awards, granted it's already on DVD, but would benefit from the boost, and I don't think it's going to happen. And I tell you, I was disappointed too. You know, Bill Mechanic, the longtime Fox chief, is one of the producers of the telecast, and he worked with Kathryn Bigelow on Strange Days, which is a favorite of mine too. And he also, of course, was the man who ushered Titanic for James Cameron. And he tried to get them both to come on stage to co-present an award, and they both declined. You know, in some ways, this horse race has become very personal and political, and so they're not going to be on stage. I love Hurt Locker, and I'm a huge fan of Kathryn Bigelow. I would love to see her get the award, but, you know, wishing it won't make it so.
Yeah, and Hurt Locker didn't succeed at the box office. Obviously, mm-hmm. succeeded, I think, wildly as a movie.
Right.
But Steve brings up a real good point: is that I think it really expertly balanced that, and I wrote that in my original view that, you know, how do you make an action movie with real thrilling, big, you know, outstanding those action moments, those action beats, but also balance it so that it doesn't come off as exploitive of a conflict. And I thought she did that amazingly well, and that's why I'm hoping that she wins too. I mean, that would be my vote. I don't have really a dog in the race, but you know what I mean.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurovich, and you can join our Oscar conversation. Which film are you rooting for? Or do you even plan to watch the Oscars on Sunday? Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Coleman spoke as he stood on the stage of the renovated Lincoln Theater on East Long Street.
Just like the Short North, the East Side will be reconnected by a platform strong enough to support buildings and businesses and most of all jobs. And until a developer steps up, the cap will be green space.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You are listening to All Sides Weekend here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Sunshine with a high around 38 today. Currently, it's just about 30 degrees here in Columbus. Clear with a low of 17 tonight. It should be a little bit cooler than normal. And tomorrow, sunny with a high of 45. Sunday should also have some sunshine, a high around 49, but a chance of afternoon rain showers in the afternoon. And then, of course, next week, expect some nice weather then, too.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jarovich, and joining me in the studio for an Oscar discussion is the other paper film critic Hope Madden, Box Office Magazine film critic Steve Ramos, and Columbus Dispatch film critic Nick Chortis. 614-292-8513 is how to join the conversation, or you can send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. And just before we move on, we've been talking about how there are 10 Best Picture nominees, and the Academy decided to do that to open the category up to more films and maybe get more people to watch the Oscars so that there are 10 nominees. So maybe your favorite movie will be nominated for Best Picture. So I'm just going to run through the 10 nominees really quickly. It's Avatar, The Blind Side, District 9, In Education, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. So those are the 10 nominees. Now, let's talk about a critically acclaimed favorite, In Education. I know that everyone on this panel emailed me and said they loved In Education. Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about that film?
Well, it stars Carey Mulligan, who's up for leading actress, and she plays a young woman living in suburban London who is kind of whisked away into a world of glitz and glamour by an older man played by Peter Sarsgaard, one of my favorite actors. You can guess by the title that it turns out to be exactly what she thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And she does get an education. I just thought it was a terrific film. Nick Hornby wrote the screenplay, adapted from memoirs, and it was a surprise to me at the time I saw it because I really hadn't read a whole lot about it. So I walked into the theater and was pretty much blown away by Mulligan, for starters. But it's also a real terrific film that could, I think, have easily gone into cliched territory, but I think for the most part avoids it and is really buoyed by great performances mm-hmm. from pretty much the entire cast. Alfred Molina plays her father as well.
And Steve, I know that you were surprised that it did receive some nominations and it didn't really get a box office bounce. I know that surprised you.
Well, you know, it hasn't so far. And it is an art house release or a specialty release. It's from the fine folks at Sony Pictures Classics. And I think what is interesting to me is that not only with films like In Education, but that's, I think it's also true for Precious, is that you have, you know, films from the indie community, so to speak. And, you know, because of them going back to, you know, 1944 circa, 10 Best Picture nominees, let's expand the playing field. And Education gets that kind of profile boost. But maybe because it doesn't have the TV campaigns, that kind of, you know, marketing money behind it, for, you know, sadly, for a lot of reasons, have not made it a choice yet at the movies. Hopefully they will. They'll tune into the Oscars. I think it's going to be record numbers in terms of viewership, and they'll see clips from the film. And I agree with Nick. It's a great film. And you know, people sometimes make the mistake. Oh, if I step into the art house, you know, I'm seeing challenging fare. No, in this case, you're seeing very, very smart, beautifully, you know, performed fare from Leni Sjøvig, you know, the Danish filmmaker who people might know, Italian for Beginners. You know, things like that. And this is kind of a breakout film for her and a film that really deserves a larger audience. Mm-hmm.
And this film seems to have a lot of smart dialogue. Let's hear a little bit of that. In this scene, the headmistress, played by Emma Thompson, tries to persuade Jenny, who is played by Carey Mulligan, from dropping out of Oxford. She plans to marry an exciting older man.
Nobody does anything worth doing without a degree.
Nobody does anything worth doing with a degree. No woman, anyway.
So what I do isn't worth doing, or what Miss Stubbs does, or Mrs. Wilson, or any of us here. Because none of us would be here without a degree. You do realize that, don't you? And yes, of course, studying is hard and boring.
Boring?
I'm sorry?
Studying is hard and boring. Teaching is hard and boring. So what you're telling me is to be bored, and then bored, and finally bored again, but this time for the rest of my life. This whole stupid country is bored. There's no life in it, or colour, or fun. It's probably just as well the Russians are going to drop a nuclear bomb on us any day now. So my choice is to do something hard and boring, or to marry my Jew.
And that was Carey Mulligan, who plays Jenny in the film In Education. And Hope, I know you really like this performance.
Oh, I thought she was great. I thought Emma Thompson was just awesome. I mean, you know, Carey Mulligan is the highlight of the film, but the supporting cast around here could not be better. Alfred Molina, as Nick Chet said, Peter Sarsgaard, who's always great in everything, and Emma Thompson, who's always great in everything. She's got such a small part in this film, and she's just searing and perfect. And again, I think so much of it has to do with the incredibly smart script. It's just it's really everything about the film is so well crafted and so worth seeing that I do hope Oscar viewers decide to give it a shot. I actually think that it's the fact that there are 10 nominations is, I think, symptomatic of that. You know, it waters down. Films can make the 10 best list and still get overlooked because it's 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think An Education, I think A Serious Man, I think these are both films that maybe would have had a shot had there been 5 nominations. They might have been in the top 5. And it, with only 4 other movies to think about, somebody might have said, you know, I never saw A Serious Man. It's the Coen brothers. That's bound to be good. Let me go see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's being completely overlooked because there's an overwhelming number of films to, you know, think about in the first place.
Well, and leading from Carey Mulligan, let's talk about the leading actress category. We have nominated Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side, Helen Mirren in The Last Station, Carey Mulligan for An Education, and Gabby Sidibe. Is that the right way? Okay, Gabby Sidibe for Precious and Meryl Streep in Julie and Julia. So we all, the critics love Carey Mulligan, but will she win? Can she beat Meryl Streep and Gabby Sidibe in Precious and Sandra Bullock for that matter?
No, she can't.
Yeah, I think with Mulligan and Sidibe, it's obviously their first nominations and folks haven't heard of them before. So it's like, these were great performances, and here's your nomination.
And it's an honor to be nominated.
Yeah, you'll be back, so we're going to give it to somebody else. I guess, you know, the odds-on favorite is Bullock, although I like Streep a lot. I like Streep's portion of Julie and Julia. I like the Julia portion.
Right.
I didn't so much like the part with Amy Adams in modern day. But, yeah, Streep's terrific. There's a, you know – it would be pretty easy to make that a caricature, and mm-hmm. Streep's such a great actress that she's not going to do that. And Julia Child is a fully fleshed human being in the movie, and I love that movie for the Julia portions of it. I wish it was the Julia Child story.
When Meryl Streep is just I'm Julia Child,
yeah.
She's just perfect at it.
Well, it could have been like the Dan mm-hmm. Aykroyd skit on Saturday Night Live
that they
actually show in the movie, but but no, she's terrific and.
Stanley Tucci,
I think obviously, Tucci.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to go to Bullock.
Well, Steve, let's talk a little bit about leading actress and how Sandra Bullock is getting a lot of buzz in this category. Do you think that she can win for the movie The Blind Side?
Oh, she is going to win on Sunday. It's a horse race between her and Streep, and I agree with everyone. I mean, Meryl Streep is such a timeless talent and such an American treasure. You know, I've been even enjoying her interviews on that Faces of America genealogy show these past few weeks. I mean, she's just amazing, and she's amazing in a very commercial, you know, audience-friendly movie, which I think speaks to her talent as well. But, you know, Amy, I think what's really an important thing for, you know, we're all advocates of talent, you know, whether we're, you know, on the journalism side of the fence or just, or movie fans. And, you know, I think it's good to remember sometimes that, you know, it really doesn't always come down to who takes the statue at home or not. That in that business, you know, the nomination matters a lot. Casey Mulligan, you know, won't get an award on Sunday, but the nomination introduced her not only to the American public, but more importantly to the American movie producers. You know, movie fans will see her in a month or so in, you know, Wall Street 2, Money mm-hmm. Never Sleeps. It's safe to say her performance in that Oliver Stone sequel will not come close to what she did in An Education, but it's going to start her Hollywood career. Gabby Sidibe is not going to get an award for Precious. But Precious actually did fairly well, you know, $30 million plus, you know, in American movies theaters last year. She now has a movie career ahead of her. I mean, those are kind of amazing things to celebrate. The nominations have changed their careers and have given them careers in U.S. movies. So that's, I think, that's something I always try to remember. As far as the Best Actress Award, it's going to go to Sandra Bullock. Now, The Blind Side is not a favorite film of mine from 2009 by a long shot. But I have to admit, it pushed the buttons. It brought some tears. It's a great story. People love the movie. And, you know, Bullock is very likable, too. She has a great career behind her. She certainly has talent. And I'm not offended if she gets the Best Actress Award. It doesn't offend me. I wouldn't vote for her. But it doesn't offend me, and I guess that's okay.
Yeah, you
okay,
can't well, get offended by the
let's and Hope, let's have you weigh in here on Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. Is she being compared to all of her other performances in being nominated for this Oscar, or is this an Oscar-worthy performance in your opinion?
No. My God, no. I think that, you know, a lot of her acceptances in her other awards coming up to this, I mean, she's come off as incredibly likable. Very humble. She thanks the director, who was awful. She thanks the rest of the cast, who were awful. She's the only thing in the film that isn't horrible, and she's not good. But
tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of gray area. And, you know, honestly, she doesn't have a stellar career. She doesn't. She's adequate at best, and she's made some incredibly awful films over the years. And this is, I mean, it's a... She's turned her career around. She did Crash several years ago, and she mm-hmm. did this now, and she's turned her career around. I don't care for her performance. I can't think of a performance of hers that I've thought was particularly good, although she seems like a very nice person and she's likable enough. But she's never done anything that's Oscar caliber. This is, to me, it's one of those career awards, just like Jeff Bridges is going to get, except that Jeff Bridges' career is really very impressive, and as is his performance. So, you know, I suppose offended is the wrong word, but... And well, apoplectic is probably closer. I'm not happy that mm-hmm. she's going to win an award. And honestly, when Sandra Bullock wins an Oscar that Meryl Streep is in contention for, as I said earlier, you know, the plague is nigh. You know, look out for the locusts. It's the end of the world.
Let's have our listeners weigh in on that, if they think that Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side is an Oscar-worthy performance, or if they liked Meryl Streep in Julie and Julia. 614-292-8513, or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurevich. You're listening to our Oscar conversation, and you can join that conversation. 614-292-8513. And just a moment ago, Hope mentioned Jeff Bridges' performance in Crazy Heart, and I did want to talk about him because he's the favorite in most blogs that I've read. He's the favorite for leading actor. The nominees for best actor are Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, George Clooney for Up in the Air, Colin Firth in A Single Man, Morgan Freeman in Invictus, and Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker. So let's hear a scene from Crazy Heart. In this scene, Jean, who is played by Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's also nominated, has a talk with Bad Blake, who is being played by Jeff Bridges. And then we'll hear a little of Bridges performing a song on stage.
Ain't no place for the weary kind.
This is so unfair.
What?
Some people give 10 years of their life to be able to do something like that, and it just pours out of you.
You mad at me?
Well, you're writing a song on my bed.
So?
So? Every time I lie down and hear that beautiful song, and you're going to be out there running around, not even remembering this day. I can't even forget.
And that was Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart. He plays Bad Blake, and that was him singing there. And I actually have not seen Crazy Heart, but I hear it's great. Nick?
I don't think it's great. I think it's very good. Actually, I think this leading actor category is the most interesting as far as I'm concerned. Hope and I were actually talking about this a little bit earlier. You've got a lot of great performances here. I mean, you think, well, it's the Oscars. You know, of course, all five nominees are going to be great. That's not always the case, as you know, Hope pointed out, maybe in the leading actors category. But for actor, I mean, if I was voting, I'd be really torn here. And forget the predictions, just who should win, I think is a much more interesting discussion. And I could see voting for Bridges. I could see voting for Clooney. I could see voting for Firth, even Renner. Clooney's performance, though, is very interesting to me, not to get too far off topic, but I don't think it's been given enough credit because people think it's George Clooney being George Clooney, that it's almost too easy. And it does look so easy, but I think that's the brilliance of the performance. I had said in the past that, you know, when Cary Grant played Cary Grant, it was great. And when George Clooney plays George Clooney, it's great.
George
and he
Clooney
shouldn't
very
be
well.
He shouldn't be dinged for that. You know what I mean? I think it's a wonderful performance. But then, you know, Bridges is great too. You
gotta
love a movie that you open up the scene and Bridges sits down in a bowling alley and orders a drink. And you're immediately, you know, you think of The Dude and The Big Lebowski, and maybe this is the closest to a sequel, you know, we're going to get to that. So there's a lot of great performances in this category. This is a tough one.
And you didn't mention Morgan Freeman in Invictus.
Not intentionally.
Yeah.
Intentionally. It's a very good performance.
You just think that movie just – it seems like it stands high above and, you know.
Yeah. For me, though, it's Bridges, Clooney, and Firth, which, you know.
Steve, what about for you?
Well, you know, what's really interesting to me is with regards to the Best Actor nomination is, you know, it likely will be Jeff Bridges. In fact, I think that really is probably the biggest guarantee of the Oscars Sunday. We all hope for surprises, and there will be some surprises, but the Bridges Award will be a guarantee. It's a very heartfelt performance in a fine film, not a standout film, but a fine film, but he makes it a better film. But you know what really strikes me is, you know, even in our conversation this morning, Hurt Locker versus Avatar and Bullock versus Streep and I think we're in sync with all the conversations around the world about the Oscars. Those are kind of the big debates. And up in the air, you know, from Paramount really hasn't been talked about that much. And Clooney really isn't talked about as much either. And I find that really surprising that up in the air for some reason, although it's done fine at the box office, it's done actually very well, has kind of fallen quietly through the cracks. And yet, here's a film that's so in sync with what's going on in America today, you know, corporate downsizing, Clooney at his best, Jason Reitman really emerging as a phenomenal filmmaker. And, you know, when you have hopes for Hollywood, you know, for many of us, our hopes are not about Avatar. We know they can do science fiction action movies very well. But can they do these kinds of adult dramas that connect with people, our time, and our place? Up in the Air is perfectly in sync with America today. And I think in past years, we would be talking about it a lot more for the Oscars. But somehow, I think in some ways, Hollywood, because of some of the financial issues, they want to celebrate a big success this year. They do want. I think they do want to celebrate a moneymaker. Avatar,
The Hurt Locker, and Precious, all of the media buzz that all of those have gotten have kind of overshadowed Up in the Air for different reasons.
Yeah, for many different reasons. Mm-hmm. And it really is a film that is really one of my favorites up there with An Education. I mean, Up in the Air is just a favorite of mine. And I think it's really going to be that one Hollywood movie that as years come by, people will look back at it and see it as an example of what Hollywood can do best when talent comes together.
It's odd because it was very heavily being talked about early.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before it came out,
I was
and
sure
as
to
it came
see
out.
It, and I was like, I was right there to see it because it had so much talk.
But even
and
talked
it
about
been,
as far as the
it's
as
been
far
nominated
as Oscar buzz go.
For everything, all three acting performances, director, screenplay, film, and Steve's right. Very few people are still talking about it. Although I do think it's going to take home the screenplay award.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of funny that it's not. It's just not being discussed more than it is because it's a phenomenal film.
And we're going to have to take a short break, and then we're going to get to a couple callers that we have. You're listening to All Sides Weekend, and you can join our Oscar conversation by calling 614-292-8513 or emailing us at allsides@wosu.org. Which Oscar nominee is your favorite? We'll be right back after this break on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we hear from each of the five directors nominated for an Oscar: Kathryn Bigelow, James Cameron, Lee Daniels, Jason Reitman, and Quentin Tarantino. Join us.
More Oscar talk coming up today at noon in just about 20 minutes here on WOSU 820 NPR News. WOSU Public Media and State Auto Insurance present Columbus Neighborhoods. See the premiere of the highly anticipated documentary that tells the story of one of our city's most vibrant and exciting neighborhoods, the Short North. Transformed from a rundown, forgotten neighborhood into Columbus's center for arts and culture, take a fresh look at one of Columbus's great neighborhoods. Watch Columbus Neighborhoods with the Short North Monday night at 8, only on WOSU TV. Sunshine with a high around 38 today. Currently, it's just around 30 degrees. Tonight, clear with a low of 17, a little cool. Saturday, sunny with a high near 45. And Sunday, another high near 45 with some sunshine. But unfortunately, a slight chance of afternoon rain showers. But the nice warm weather should continue into next week as well. You are listening to All Sides Weekend here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
And welcome back to All Sides Weekend on WOSU 820. I'm Amy Jurovich, and with me for our Oscar conversation, Steve Ramos with Box Office Magazine and BoxOffice.com, Nick Chortis with the Columbus Dispatch, and the other papers, Hope Madden. And our three film critics are weighing in on the films that they like best, and you can do the same, 614-292-8513. And we have Sean on the line who wants to talk a little bit about The Blind Side. Sean, what's your opinion?
Hey, just I wanted to say first, Ann, you're doing a great job. Thanks for the job you're doing on the show. You asked earlier if people were offended about Sandra Bullock winning the nomination for her performance, and I'm not nearly as offended. It just bored to tears. The Great White Hope theme in both the Avatar and whatever movie Sandra Bullock was in is so boring to me, and I it's a sad thing to me that. You know, we're spending so much money on putting together things with such limited creativity. And the second comment I had, and then I'll take your response off the air, is that there was a movie, The Perfect Man. Is that you were talking about it earlier?
A single man or a serious man?
Serious man.
There you go.
My wife and I watched that movie, and we didn't understand it at all. We try to watch, you know, reasonably intelligent movies, and I do not get it. So I would love if somebody could explain what that movie was about to me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. So a little opinion on The Blind Side there. But then also A Serious Man, Colin Firth, or no, A
yeah,
Single
that's
Man.
That's the Coen brothers.
Oh, I'm getting them both mixed up.
It gets confusing. Single Man and Serious Man.
Yeah, you go ahead. Serious Man is nominated for Best Picture, but then Colin Firth is nominated for A Single Man.
Right.
Why don't you, you guys just go ahead and take care of that.
The Coen brothers, it seems like a very personal film. It's a very wry comedy, sort of a Job sort of a character and just the travails of his life. It's incredibly intimately crafted and just brilliantly put together. Quirky, definitely, and clearly a very personal sort of a statement from the Coen brothers.
So is that the one that Sean was saying he didn't get?
Yeah.
I think of the two, that seems likely. Mm-hmm.
I wrote in my review that I think it's a very funny movie for people who find it funny at all, okay, if that makes any sense. I've also said, hey, if you're not into it in the first 15 minutes of this movie, I would bail because it's not going to change. Mm-hmm. But the Coen brothers, you got to love them. I mean, they're really – in movies like Burn After, if you thought the conclusion to Burn After Reading was dour or maybe a little bit unclear, then wait till you see A Serious Man because it's really kind of ratcheted up a notch. But I agree with Hope. I think it's a very personal film, and I think that they've gotten to the point where they can just kind of do what they want, and they're not afraid to go ahead and do that. As far as explaining the ending to the film. I'm not going to attempt it.
We're talking about the ending of A Single Man, maybe.
Serious Man.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got them mixed up again. You know, I'm just going to stop talking.
I mean, I've had debates about it with many people, you know, emailers as well. But I think that's kind of the – It's the fun of it for me to be able to watch
maybe,
it. And
maybe
yeah,
too. Yeah. Maybe yeah, Sean I think so can too. Send you an email and
yeah,
you guys can,
right.
can chat back and forth a little bit about that. Okay. Let's take another call, 614-292-8513. And Bill, you're on the line with someone you think got snubbed.
Hello?
Yes, Bill. What
oh,
is
hi.
Your...
Yes, hi. Yes, my opinion doesn't count for much, but my wife and I saw Crazy Hearts and... frankly, didn't care for it very much, although I have to say we were very impressed with Jeff Bridges' singing ability. I had no idea he was he's really good. He could make a career as a country and western singer. But we were wondering, why was Sherlock Holmes completely snubbed? I thought it was a fantastic movie. Robert Downey Jr. did an amazing job. As far as I know, it didn't get any nominations at all.
Okay, we'll ask our panel about that. Thank you for your call. Steve, did you want to weigh in on Sherlock Holmes? Did you see that?
Sherlock Holmes has an Art Direction Award, and I think that's a fine award for a great entertainment. You know, I think there's two types of victories for movies, and I think if you were to talk to any producer, they would tell you about them. There's critical acclaim, which every producer does desire, even if you're a Bruckheimer type. You know, you want critical acclaim, and you strive for that. But the most important thing is the box office. And the acclaim of the movie buyer, you know, the ticket buyer who goes to the box office and spends his hard-earned money and time and sits down and watches your movie, and then, like this gentleman, leaves the movie theater and tells his friends, hey, I had a great time watching Sherlock Holmes. You should check it out, too. And that's how Sherlock Holmes won this year. You know, it got some technical awards, deservingly so. It's a great-looking film. And it won at the box office. And I think for those producers, you know, Joel Silver, I think that's probably the victory they were looking for. But once again, you know, sometimes this is about, and that award means a lot to Robert Downey Jr., whose career has been completely rejuvenated thanks to audience-friendly movies, not thanks to an Oscar. It took box office hits to rejuvenate a troubled actor's career, and now we're going to have many more movies from him, including Iron Man 2, which I'm excited to see. I don't expect it to be at the Oscars in 2011, except for some technical stuff, but I think people are going to enjoy it just the same. Like they had fun with Sherlock Holmes. I had fun watching it too.
Yeah, I had fun watching it. It's not a great film, but I enjoyed it for what it was. It's just that it goes back to this is a tough category to break into this year.
Right,
Robert
right.
Downey Jr. did a fine job, but this is five.
Maybe they should
real great
performances. Expanded that one to 10 as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, let's expand them all to 10.
Yes,
then we can watch
never
for 8 hours.
Off the show. Well, since we're running short on time, let's keep moving into another category. I wanted to talk about supporting actress. This is one that, you know, that may be a lock for Monique. Let's hear a clip from Precious. This is Mary, who's played by Monique, and she tells a social worker she wants to be reunited with her daughter Precious and her grandchildren.
They belong to me. Okay? Now, there was a time Precious had everything, and I done told her that. And me and Carl, we love Precious. And you need to know that. We love Precious, and we had dreams. Precious was born around the same time Miss West's son got killed. The summertime. She was born the summertime. Remember that?
I was born in November.
November. Yeah, that's right.
And that was Monique playing Mary in Precious. And Hope, do you think that this is – you had mentioned that this is the lock category. You think she's the winner?
I think so, yeah. I know that she hasn't done much of the sort of, you know, Oscar-friendly, give-me-this-award kind of campaigning that they like to see. But I just don't think that there's anybody else who comes even – close, really. I mean, honestly, I think the category is a little bit weak. I mean, as they go, as the rest of the Oscar categories are this year. And I think that her performance is, I mean, beside the fact that up until this film, she was strictly a comic, you know, I mean, her, even if she'd had years of dramatic acting experience behind her, this performance is stunning.
Mm-hmm. She just transformed herself in this.
Yeah. You know, when I saw Precious, I saw it actually a couple weeks after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had heard all the buzz.
All the talk,
I mean, the,
yeah.
the, you know, the weeks of buzz leading
right,
up to even
right.
its release here in Columbus. But my jaw still dropped because
right.
before that, I'll be honest, every movie that, you know, Monique walked onto the screen, I kind of rolled my eyes like, oh, geez,
yeah,
here's
yeah.
Monique, you know. But she's terrific. And I agree with Hope. I mean, it's a little bit of a weak category. I mean, Penelope Cruz in 9, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I just don't get that at all.
No,
there's other performances out there.
Okay. Well, let's bring Nathan into the conversation. Nathan, what's your comment?
Well, I wanted to talk about Avatar real quick.
Sure.
And that conversation is a little hard to follow up because that was some great acting in that film. But, my problem with Avatar is, it's not really it fails as a science fiction movie. Okay, and my point is they failed to answer some very basic questions about the film and the story. And I don't think it should get Best Picture because of this. Because it's simply because of the substance, the euboctonium, or cannot pronounce that.
Unobtainium?
Unobtainium.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a real term.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not made clear what that's used for.
But okay? It's worth a lot of money. Yeah.
Well, it's some...
it's worth a lot of money. But they mentioned several times in the film that Earth is a dying planet. Okay, so I went through the film, and I'm thinking, okay, why are humans on this planet in the first place? Yeah, it's worth a lot of money, and yeah, these military people and the one corporate head guy was a real jerk, but it didn't make sense why they would be on this planet in the first place, and the only thing I could think of, and the only thing that kind of makes sense in a science fiction world, is if that material was being used to build spaceships or as fuel, so humans can colonize other planets and escape a dying world.
Okay, well,
and
let's...
Just that thought struck me. I couldn't root for the Navi.
Okay. Well, we're going to get our critics to weigh in here. So, you know, some holes in Avatar. I mean, it's not nominated for screenplay. It's not going to win for script. There are no acting nominations. It's more of just a spectacular thing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the substance is unobtainium, and we can go into it. I mean, you could call it a MacGuffin. Which is determined movies where it's something of great importance, even though they don't really explain it, but it doesn't really matter because it's the thing that drives the plot. It's the thing that everybody's seeking out. Whether it works as science fiction or not, I think he's right in a certain sense. It doesn't work as science fiction the same way that Star Trek didn't really work as science fiction. It's not dealing with hard science fiction concepts. It's more of an action fantasy. It's a Star Wars. You know, just because it's set in space doesn't necessarily make it science fiction per se.
Okay.
But as an action fantasy, I think it's fine. We could argue the merits of Avatar. I think it's dramatically weak and a real good-looking film.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay. Well, we did talk about Avatar a lot at the beginning, so
right.
We can just we'll move on. And Linda wants to bring up Meryl Streep a little bit. Linda, what's your comment?
Well, I just find it my name is Linda Harder. I find it interesting that someone that always gives a great performance, like Meryl Streep, it kind of gets hit by bombshells every now and then from other people who suddenly excel in something, you know? And because the movie may be disingenuous or not what it should be, and doesn't have maybe a lot of following, it still doesn't take anything away from her performance. And I think that that's, Sandra Bullock was good in The Blind Side. Was she great like Meryl Streep is in most of her movies? No, you know?
Okay.
And that's what I always find interesting about the Academy Awards. Sometimes people get railroaded just because of where they are or what they're in, you know?
Well, thank you very much for those comments, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Steve, I don't know if you want to weigh in there. Can Meryl Streep win too many Oscars? Does that end up hurting her?
Well, no, but I think in some ways, you know, there are trends, you know, and I don't think of the Oscars as like this kind of accurate barometer of quality. I think of it almost as like this political spectacle. And just there are trends that kind of determine who gets elected into public offices in certain years. There's a trend that's going on with the Oscars this year. And I think what it is you have an industry that was hurting. And then you have a film that's, like your caller said, it's not quality science fiction. This isn't, Isaac Asimov. Avatar is just, it's not even good science fiction, but it is clearly powerful entertainment. And it reminded this industry that you can make money. Here's the solution for the next 20 years, 3D IMAX. 3D IMAX will be your financial salvation, theater owners, movie makers.
Okay.
And I think they're in the mood to celebrate that, and that's what's going to happen on Sunday. It's going to be a celebration of grand entertainment and audience-friendly films.
Right. And
okay,
I think that the caller can take solace in the fact that when it's all said and done, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, Meryl Streep will be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
As a great actress.
Yes.
And Sandra Bullock will not. So, you know, these Oscar ceremonies are it's you don't want to get too worked up about
it. Right. Well, Steve mentioned family friendly. So let's talk about a film in the last few minutes we have that's nominated for Best Picture and Best Animated Feature. One of my personal favorites, Up. In this scene, Carl Fredrickson, who is voiced by Ed Asner, is surprised by Doug, the talking dog.
We have your dog.
Wonder who he belongs to.
Sit, boy. Hey, look, he's trained. Shake. Uh-huh. Speak.
Hi there.
Did that dog just say hi there?
Oh, yes.
Bruh!
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you. My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart master, and he made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel!
Doug is probably my favorite actor of the year. I mean, he won my Oscar because he won my heart. So let's just talk for a quick minute. Can Up win? I mean, obviously, we haven't even mentioned it, of winning Best Picture, but maybe it'll win Best Animated Feature. Is it just kind of nominated for Best Picture for
sure,
the kids?
Sure, Up can win, but just not Best Picture. it'll win Best Animated Film.
Okay.
And it's just amazing. I mean, I wonder if people are getting to the point where they're like, oh, Pixar again, you know. I mean, but it's every year.
Yeah.
I mean, WALL-E
yeah.
was my favorite movie of last year, and there has not been a clunker yet, with the possible exception of Cars, which I was not a big fan of.
Yeah, I agree. Up was my favorite film this year. I mean, yeah. hands down, it was my favorite film this year. I loved it, just beginning to end. It's the first film I can think of that I left the screening and immediately dialed my sister. It was like, you know.
You can't wait to see Up, yeah.
Take Ruby. I have a 5-year-old niece. Get her yeah. there right now. It was, yeah, I loved everything about this film. And it makes me sad that it can't possibly win Best Picture, but it will win Best Animated Film. And, you know, at least it's nominated for Best Picture. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, to get a couple nominations there. Steve, did you have anything to add about Up?
Well, sure. I'd like to say Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
yes, that is yeah, another
shout out
great
to
Fantastic
one. Fantastic Mr. Fox. But you know what is great is, you know, Pixar is like, you know, Meryl Streep. And what that means is consistent quality year after year. And how phenomenal that, you know, once again, you know, and there's like a documentary coming out about, you know, how Disney before, you know, Lion King and Beauty and the Beast kind of, there was a time where we thought animated feature films were going away. And now we know they're not going away because of films like Up and WALL-E, films where families can go en masse together, parents and kids can watch these great movies together and have a great time. And that was certainly true with Up and Fantastic Mr. Fox and Coraline. And, you know, Princess and the Frog, and it's great to see that genre thrive yeah. in the 21st century.
Of course, Avatar is also another animated film that did very well.
Indeed, yes. Well, we are down to the last minute, and I do have a couple announcements to make. I wanted to say that there are a few theaters around here that are having Oscar parties, Sunday at 7, Studio 35, the Gateway Film Center, and the Drexel in Bexley is having, they're all having Oscar parties at the movie theater, so you could check those out. And also, I wanted to say that on Monday, you can tune in for a special All Sides with Ann Fisher, Monday, March 8th at 10 a.m. The program will be broadcast from Cup of Joe in the Short North, and we will preview WOSU's television documentary Columbus Neighborhoods. The first of 6 shows debuts Monday at 8 on WOSU-TV, and it shows the history of the revitalized Short North neighborhood. But you can learn more about this project and get a preview of the documentary on All Sides with Ann Fisher Monday morning at 10 on WOSU 820 NPR News. And that's all the time we have. I'm Amy Jarovich. Thank you to Hope Madden from The Other Paper. Thank you to Nick Tortas from the Columbus Dispatch. And thanks to Steve Ramos from BoxOffice.com and Box Office Magazine. Also, thanks to Emma Fett at the controls. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for the State House News Bureau stories on WOSU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at OHEA.org.